Hi, and welcome to the Big Web Show, Everything Web That Matters. I'm your host, Jeffrey Zeldman, and my guest today is Anna Debenham.
Hello.
Today's episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Jeffrey. That's J-E-F-F-R-E-Y. There are three spellings of Jeffrey, but that's the one you want, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y. And with no further ado, Anna is the author of Front End Style Guides, a book for five simple steps. She's the creator of the Game Console Browser's website for developers, the co-producer of 24 Ways. She is the technical editor of A List Apart, NetMag's Young Developer of the Year last year at the Net Awards, a writer, a designer developer. There's really nothing she doesn't do. And she's a fan of Adventure Time, I believe.
Yay.
Now, how do you... You're in England, right?
Yeah.
How do you get Adventure Time in England?
We used to have it on iTunes, and for some reason they took it away. We can watch it on Cartoon Network as well, but they're really old series. So
you're not...
We haven't seen past, say, season 5.
Oh, my.
I know.
That's all I wanted to talk about. The last episode that I saw.
Don't give any spoilers away.
I won't give any spoilers away, but it was so heartbreaking. That show, it's disguised. I mean, that show is a perfect show for people, not kids, yeah. Not adults. It's.
I wish I'd grown up with it.
Yeah.
Kids these days are so lucky.
They are. Well, I grew up with Bugs Bunny.
I grew up with Cow and Chicken.
Cow and Chicken.
Yeah.
Claymation? or anime?
Just cartoon. Really terrible cartoon.
I don't think I've ever seen that. Cow and Chicken. How influential was that? Like, Bugs Bunny totally influenced me. Oh, Cow and Chicken is Chicken. David... Is David Fice.
Is that the same as Ren and Stimpy?
Yeah, it's Cartoon Network. It's Ren and Stimpy guy.
It's basically Ren and Stimpy, but like with Ren as a cow and Stimpy as a chicken.
Oh my. Seth MacFarlane was one of the writers. That's the guy who does American Dad and Ted about the evil talking teddy bear. And Jendi Tartofsky is another one of the writers, and she has a show now called Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. So Dan Castellaneta is one of the voice talents, and that's the guy from The Simpsons, one of the several brilliant people from The Simpsons. I think that's Dan is the voice of Homer Simpson. So, wow.
All these things.
The internet. The internet is how I know those things. I'm learning them right now. But I grew up with Bugs Bunny, which that ain't bad. Chuck Jones. What's the voice guy's name? This is embarrassing. Mel Blanc. And the composer is... Wow. Again, it's Carl Stalling. It was the composer. A lot of music that I and a lot of people grew up thinking is Looney Tunes music is actually, you know, so you'll suddenly be in an opera or something and hear it and go, oh. Or you'll be listening to an old jazz record and hear it and go, oh, that's what he was riffing on. It's crazy. So how was Cow and Chicken? Was that good?
No.
But Ren and Stimpy was good.
Yeah, but compared to Adventure Time, no.
Oh, nothing. Nothing compares to Adventure Time.
No.
They're aging... The characters, right?
I know. That's what I love about it.
And relationships end and they hurt?
Yeah. It's not like they just go back to square one at the beginning of every episode. There is a story throughout it.
So when I was growing up, there was a show called All in the Family. about a prejudiced guy named Archie Bunker and his family and his hippie son-in-law, Rob Reiner. And it was based on a British show, which I think had even more swearing and even more racism. But toward the end, they killed one of the main characters. She got cancer and died. And she was a loved character. She was the heart of the show, Edith Bunker. And that kind of blew my mind that they could do that, that a show could do that.
Yeah.
Because they're just supposed to always be there, like the characters in The Wizard of Oz are always there, right? Just like, you know what I mean?
They're
in a little, they live in a little drawer in a little world, and they're supposed
to. And they wear the same clothes every day.
But that. And Adventure Time does the same thing. They take like tremendous risks with, you know, our hearts.
Yeah. Now I hear Merlin Mann talk about it a lot on his podcast. And yeah, just some of the things like with Simon and Marcy, the kind of connection between
that's
them.
What I, yeah. And well, so as you can imagine, when I say it's heartbreaking, it's going to involve them. But yeah. So people who don't, so people who are tuning into the show because they want to hear about web development, we'll get there in a minute. But I just, wow. What influence does it have on you? Do you do this at Halloween? Are you like one of the characters? Who's your favorite character?
Oh, I quite like Peppermint Butler.
Huh. Interesting choice. Good choice. Not Marceline or.
Yeah, I like Marceline.
Fire Princess.
Not so much. BMO's fun.
BMO's amazing.
I decided I'm going to get a cat and call it BMO.
They do great stuff with gender too, which they just
did
get away
that,
with.
That video.
The video, no, I
where
did not.
Where they talk about how BMO is neither male or female.
Yeah, I didn't see that video, but I'm always, I mean, there's lots of stuff like that in the show. And again, it's just, it's as if, not only is the show set in a post-apocalyptic world, but it's like the creators live in a post-prejudicial world where it's just, it's okay to play with gender and they don't worry that some sponsor is going to, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like the one with the door, the door wizard, and they're singing songs and you see there's a love interest between Marceline and Princess Bubblegum.
Did I not see that one?
The Door Lord steals their things and they have to get them back off him. And so they start up a band. It's a really good one. You need to see it.
I have to. What season is that? What season is that?
Our seasons are actually different.
Oh.
Yeah. What they did was they split seasons in half and called them season one and season two, even though they're all season one, just to make us feel like we're getting more.
But
and that they release them sort of gradually.
So LPs used to work the opposite way. So the Beatles would make a record and it would have 12 tracks in England. And it would have 8 tracks in America. And then every 3 records, Capitol Records, the American distributor, would release a new album by the Beatles. It wasn't really a new album. So you'd have like, and the Beatles changed so much that it was really bizarre because there'd be like something that was kind of Love Me Do like, and then something that was kind of Revolver like on the same album. And you'd go like, really? Or maybe as a kid, you didn't go really. You just accepted it all as great music. But later you go, wow, those don't. Those are obviously from different periods.
And then I guess you come to the UK and think you're getting a new album.
So everything in art seems to evolve really quickly, right? The Beatles changed from like a kind of a rockabilly-inspired rock group to a pop group immediately, and then they became sort of composers or serious songwriters or something. And, you know, Adventure Time, every few episodes, it's deeper and more profound. And in just a few years, it's become this complete cultural phenomenon. you know, and you can almost know that you're going to like somebody if they like it.
Yeah, yeah. I got Kenneth a shirt, an Adventure Time shirt, and he had a student come up to him and give him a fist bump. That was pretty cool.
Nice. Very nice indeed. Well, I wish we always had the same television. It's strange to me that we have that certain things don't travel very well between.
Yeah, still.
Considering that we're kind of on the internet with each other all day long.
Yeah.
And on Twitter with each other and on Facebook with each other. It just seems.
You do hate you a bit for getting all the good shows first.
You do?
Yeah.
You hate us? But you get all the good shows first too. Just
no,
different.
We don't.
You don't?
No.
Well, you have Dickens, and you have Jane Austen.
Yep, none of us watch that.
You have you have the greatest writers of all time: D.H. Lawrence, Shakespeare.
Right.
So we have TV.
But you're going to talk about Sherlock.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like the new Sherlock. I like the guy. I like both those actors, but I don't. I'm too familiar with those stories, you know?
Yeah.
Some adaptations are hard to accept. I don't know. There's another one. There's an American one that seems even. I know everyone loves it, and the performances are great, but I just. It's not a modern story.
Mm. I think people like it for that.
Say again?
I think people like it for that.
I know they do. I know they do. I'm just being a purist to something that I've, you know, loved for decades, and I don't want it to change. There's an American version where Dr. Watson is a woman, but I haven't watched that, obviously. But and, like, you know, is there an attraction? God. The minds of these people. Which, again... So that's why when there's something really great on television, it's such a revelation, because so much of it is terrible. And I guess that's true on the web too. And that's why you are a revelation. And let's talk about you.
Segue.
Yeah, did you like that? You noticed that? That was pretty good, right? how long have you been doing this?
I think I started sort of writing HTML when I was about 14. There was a site called Neopets. Have you heard of it?
Neopets?
Yeah, it's a bit like Moshi Monsters today.
That doesn't help me at all. I'm sorry to say.
I don't know what the kids these days play with.
14
but
years.
It was an online site, and it had you could adopt a pet, and you could make a web page for that pet. And it was just a blank text area. And so I learned how to kind of add things to it and build some really hideous designs in it. And after that, I started listening to Paul Barg's podcast, Barg World.
Sure.
And I got really into that, and I started asking questions on the forum, and I learned about CSS through that.
How did you learn CSS?
How did I learn it?
No, how did you learn about it?
Just from listening to Paul's podcast.
Paul's forum.
Yeah, because I got an iPod when I was 16, and I started downloading podcasts, and I found one that was about web design, and I thought it was quite funny that people earned a living doing web design, so I started listening to it.
It is funny.
It is. People get paid to do stuff that's fun.
That's the whole thing.
So that's how I learned about it.
So you didn't start out as like a musician and then move into the web, or you were studying banking, but it wasn't for you, so you moved into the web. You've been studying the web since you were 14.
Yeah.
You're 28 now? 24. I knew I was overshooting there.
Same age as you.
Exactly. But I'm just a multiple of that. So, okay, so that's 14 to 24. It's 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And to get back to that theme, so much changes in 10 years.
Yeah.
not in like eternal things, like not that much changes in medicine, probably. I mean, some things do, I guess, but not the way the web has. 10 years. So you started in
2004.
So CSS was already established as the layout language. That's how you learned. You didn't. Yeah. You never did table layouts.
I did do table layouts because I was just reading lots of articles and going to lots of bad websites that show me how to do that, and also using things like Front Page. And even in school, they taught a bit of web design, and that was all in tables.
Who taught that?
IT teachers.
Have you gone back to those people?
Yes, yes.
And explained to them?
Yeah, and I've done. I've gone into schools and taught kids there some web design. I did a bit of work with Mozilla, doing kind of outreach.
As a freelancer.
Yeah, yeah.
How does that work?
I just did some work with them for about 6 months. Because I was doing talks about web standards in schools. I gave a talk in London about how the exams at the moment are, like, I took a photocopy of one of the exam papers and, you know, it was saying things like HTML is just for layout and just for styling, and I was just showing what kids were being taught today and saying that we need to go into schools and teach them how it's really done. Otherwise, they're going to come out thinking they can do web design. And yeah.
Why do you think the state of that kind of education is so bad? It's that way here too. Why do you think it's so behind the times?
I think a lot of the textbooks that they use are kind of out of date because things move so fast. You know, when you do a course in web design and then you go to teach it 3 or 4 years later, all that stuff that you've learned is probably quite out of date. And if you're regurgitating it every year, you know, it's just going to get worse. But teachers are so hard pressed for time to learn all these things. It's a real struggle. So that's why I thought it'd be better to have people from industry coming into schools and giving talks and workshops.
How did you make that happen?
I contacted my local school and asked them if I could do it. I asked around people in the industry to ask them to do the same, you know, to contact their old school. In the end, Mozilla got me to do some workshops at schools to show them how to use some of their stuff. It's really taken off. I mean, now you look at things like Code Club, where they're doing that in the UK. They're going to schools and you have mentors, and it's really, a lot's changed in that time. And I think
so you were doing this before all that?
Yeah.
And how old were you then? Like 20?
No, I was 18 and 19.
You weren't, were you yourself in, did you go to university or you just worked or how does
No, that? I came straight out of school. I looked at going to university, but all the courses looked really out of date.
So you wanted to study just web development if you were going to go to university and...
I wanted to do a web design course, but there weren't really any that were up to date.
Have you ever thought of starting one?
No, I couldn't do that.
Somebody needs to though, right?
Yeah, I mean, you've got, there's actually a really good one in Greenwich. I only found out about a few years ago, but it's a master's, like a master's degree. And there's that UX unicorn school that's being set up.
Yes, that's going to be great with,
although,
do you think that'll be focused on HTML that much? I don't know. Or mostly
I'm sure
on UX.
It'll have some of it.
It has, I guess it has to with Jen.
I just wonder how courses can stay up to date.
With Leslie Jensen Inman, yeah.
If everything's changing all the time. I mean, you'd need the people who teach the courses to be in industry.
Yes.
There's a few people who do that who go into unis and give talks, and I think that's really valuable.
I teach at School of Visual Arts in the MFA Interaction Design program there, and everyone at School of Visual Arts in any department is a working professional. That's
That's really good.
That's how that was set up. So you can't kind of retire from the business and then teach it.
Yeah.
And you can, but not there.
Yeah. That's how it should be.
Yeah. When did you start writing?
What you mean, like blog posts or articles?
I'm going to assume that you did blog posts first, then articles, and then your book.
Yeah, yeah. I was blogging from about maybe 14 or so, but not under my name because, yeah.
Why?
Various reasons.
You were still in school and you didn't want to get the wrong kind of attention.
Yeah, they were saying, you know, don't tell anyone your real name and all that sort of thing. But yeah, when I was 16 or so, then I felt more confident about doing that. But it was never writing about anything interesting. It was all just, I don't like doing maths.
you write about pretty interesting stuff now.
Thanks.
And very technical. What got you into what made you start looking at websites in game console browsers? What made you decide, you know, if we're really going to do this, if we're really designing the web for everyone, we need to look at that stuff. Did you know people that was their primary way of accessing the web?
Yeah, so it came off a project. I was doing a client project. It was based around schools, so it was a web app that kids used to tell teachers how they feel. And we went into schools and asked some questions like, what browser do you use? What devices do you have? And we went into one class and every child there had a Nintendo DS. And I decided to get one just to see what it was like to use it. And I found it had a web browser. So I thought, well, if all of these kids have this device, like it's the most popular device they have, I should probably make sure that it works in that browser. And so I wrote it up and didn't really think much of it. And then I think after that, a lot of people got quite excited about it, saying they didn't even realize it had a browser in it, which I didn't either. And then I wrote an Alistair Part article about it, and I had to do lots of research for that. And while I was doing the research, I found that all of these other console browsers exist, and I found some stats about how many people use them. It just came off from that.
And so you started doing things like running the CSS ACID 3 test.
Yeah, so there's like an HTML5 test.
And yeah.
It was, just to get an idea of how good the browsers were. I just think they're good kind of baseline. I mean, some of the tests lie. Some of them say that they can do things they can't, but it just gives me an idea of kind of how advanced the browser is.
Besides the fact that you're performing a great public service for everyone who develops websites, I actually like the look and feel, the nice, simple look and feel of your site at console.maband.co.uk.
That's just Bootstrap.
That's just Bootstrap. I did not know that. How embarrassing for
sorry.
How awkward and embarrassing for me. But where do you get the game console artwork?
Oh, I drew them.
You drew them in what? In Illustrator?
Fireworks.
In Fireworks.
Yeah.
Are you tracing over photographs?
Yeah. I'm sure there's a better way of doing it, but that's how I've always done it.
It looks fantastic.
Thank you. It takes quite a while to do, but I think it helps show how you use it.
Oh, it definitely does. What is maband.co.uk? Why did you pick that name? What is that?
So this is back when I was 16 and I was trying to find a name for a website, and I wanted it to be short and memorable, and so I just went on Wikipedia and just started clicking random articles, and one of them that came up was Maban, which is Aboriginal for magic, and I thought, you know, that's kind of a short word. Yeah, that's it really.
So have you had Aboriginals visiting
and
being disappointed?
So. I also found out it's a place in South Sudan. There's a big refugee camp there.
Wow. I
didn't know about that.
Have you had any confusion on that score or anyone trying to buy
that? No, it just means when I'm doing a Twitter search for the site, I get a lot of different things come up, which is kind of interesting.
I thought it was some kind of anagram of your name.
It could be, yeah.
But
I guess that's what I liked.
Like a strange sideways one. But it's Maben? Maban?
I don't really know how to pronounce it.
Mm.
Yeah.
And your site is also Bootstrap?
No. I just, picked some colors. And I'm not really a designer. I don't do it for client work. It's just something I do for fun, which is why it looks so hideous.
You have a portfolio, though. What's the deal with that?
Oh, that's for when I do front-end development for clients. That's the sites I've worked on. So these aren't sites I've designed. It says what I've done on the site.
Yes.
And you'll see that none of them say design.
Well, one does.
Hmm?
One does.
Which one?
Day 22.
Oh, yeah. I did a bit of design for someone who didn't have a designer.
And CycleFit?
Yeah. I wouldn't call myself a designer, though.
Okay. Everyone did back in the day. A lot of people called themselves designers with, no more design training than you have.
Yeah, I think it's just because I don't want to do it professionally. Mm. I really dislike those client meetings where they're like, yeah, I really don't like blue, or they ask you to add all these things in. And I just wouldn't enjoy that. I like doing it just in my spare time, but like those console illustrations, like I enjoyed doing that, but I don't think I could do it as my living.
How did you get interested in front end style guides, and what was the genesis of the book? What happened there?
So that was I first found out about them at I did an internship at ClearLeft back in 2009, and Natalie Down, who she's at Lanyard now, mm-hmm. Lanyard, and she was doing things called pattern primers, which were it was basically just a page with all of the styles on it, and she was doing that for WWF, which was a client at the time, and I wrote an article for 24 Ways about how she'd done them. And some of the other ones that people used, because people were using different types of the same thing,
mm-hmm.
In isolation. And it kind of a year later, Five Simple Steps asked if I wanted to do a pocket guide. So I did that eventually.
had you yourself made a lot of style guides?
Yeah, at that point I had done basically for every client project. After that, I did a style guide, whether it was made public or not. I did it for my own use.
Which one? Are there any public that we should go look at?
Yeah, so there's one that's just gone live is Code for America. And that's at style.codeforamerica.org. This has sort of code snippets in it. If you go further down, it's where you get to the site modules. So you can open out the code snippets and see how each module was built. So if you wanted to reuse that style, because Code for America, the whole site is kind of built by lots of different people, some of whom aren't, web developers. So it's important to make it easy for them to add different bits of content.
Who actually designed the site?
That was designed by ClearLeft.
Okay. And they picked the typefaces and so on?
Yeah. Code for America picked the typefaces. They use Gotham and Sentinel, which are
right.
used in Obama's campaign.
And who is Code for America?
So they're like the equivalent of gov.uk. You know gov.uk?
Yeah.
They're the equivalent in America, and they create these really interesting projects that are good for society. So they'll do things like you can adopt a hydrant. So you basically look after it and make sure it's still in working order. And if it's not, then you can let the proper people know. Just lots of kind of public good projects.
Okay.
It's really hard for me to explain.
No, you're doing a great job. And then they have like Code for Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is Code for America made by British people.
I'd say we built the foundations of the system, but it's maintained by Americans.
Got it. Got it. Well, that's cool.
It was really good fun to work on. I'd say my favorite project. They're really great clients. We worked with Mike Magowski, and he's so lovely. He sent me a big cake.
What kind of cake?
It was a Victoria sponge.
A victory sponge?
Victoria sponge. It's like sponge cake with jam and cream in the middle.
I have never heard of that. This is
delicious.
I got to tell you, this is one of the only interviews I've ever done where I just keep saying, I've never heard of that. I don't know about that. Oh, of course. I mean, sometimes it's, you wrote the style guide and designed it and did the responsive layout, or how did that work?
I built it. So John, who works at Clearleft, he's the designer, and he'd come up with kind of patterns, so bits of the site that he wanted built, or sometimes he'd give me a template, and I'd kind of dissect that into modules, into bits of content that needed to be built. And each time I built something new, I'd add it to the style guide.
Why, if I may ask, the homepage is kind of one endlessly scrolling thing. Why
style guide or the site?
Yeah, the style guide.
Yeah.
But if you just go to the URL of the style guide, right?
Yeah.
There are subpages if you go to the hamburger menu.
Yeah. So those are templates. So they're built with bits of the style guide to just demonstrate that they work.
But the style guide itself is one endlessly scrolling piece.
Yeah. I mean, there is an end to it. It's just very long.
I don't think I'll ever find the end of it. What if the part that you really like is the part at the very end?
You can skip through it. There's a little jump menu.
Okay.
Because it does get quite long. Also, there's another view, which are called patchwork view, which is just everything without the code, that's quite nice to look at if you're on, if you're looking at it on a phone or a device where you don't really care about what the code is. You just want to see how it looks.
Right. You just want to see all the little pieces.
Yeah.
I'm viewing a style guide again. Yeah. So, and how does a person use this? A person at the company, do they download the icon? Is it all on GitHub? What's the?
No, it's all on GitHub. So every time they want to add a new style, they can add it to the style guide. If they want to, say they're looking for something that's going to make some content prominent or make it stand out, they can look through it and see if there's one that already exists that they can use.
And if not?
And if not, they can create their own.
So the style sheet is in GitHub as well, and they update the style sheet, and then it automatically comes back to style.codeforamerica.org where they can see what they've done?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's automatical. I think Mike needs to push some buttons.
Okay.
Not sure how that makes easy sense. That is. But the idea is it would be as up-to-date as a website.
This is the new thing. This is what everyone does now.
It's something that's a lot more common.
Now?
Now, yeah. So, like, Brad Frost talks about it quite a lot. Who else? Samantha Warren talks about style tiles. So designers have their own kind of version of this. Dan Moore, element collages. Just lots of different types of the same thing. I really like that. I really like that everyone has their own version.
But we all do this. But I can remember when it was kind of a novelty to make a one-page style guide at the end of a project. I think that
the
was,
idea is you
that
build
was a differentiation.
It. Yeah, yeah. And it's something I didn't see a lot of when I started, but now I'm seeing a lot more of.
It was always done, but nobody talked about it. Nobody shared it. What's happening now is there's a lot more openness about all these
kinds
of things.
Yeah, it's a shame that people didn't share them because that I find they're really useful for learning. So if I want to know how something's built, rather than pick through the website and try to find, say, pagination or something like that, I can just look at the style guide and find it in there.
It's interesting. We've always been an industry where there's a lot of sharing, but not of everything. And now we're, you know, it's kind of the same thing. There was a long time where people didn't talk about pricing. And now people are starting to talk about that. But it's something
I think it's a lot easier now with sites like GitHub. And as well, I think clients are happier with it, with sharing stuff.
They seem to be. It seems like responsive design kind of forced the process open.
Yeah.
And somehow in that, things happened. Like clients accepted that websites don't have to look the same in every browser, because they're not going to look the same in every device anyway. Yeah. And clients started accepting that this is a process where you might not get comps. Mm-hmm. And if you're not getting comps and there's these materials, maybe if your studio shares those materials or your in-house team shares those materials, it's actually good publicity for you.
Yeah.
And that's a nice change.
Yeah, I mean, you look at things like Starbucks. They publish their style guide, and I just see people link to that all the time. It's just an incredible. It's really is an incredible piece of work, and it shows that they care about design. And I think it encourages people to consider working there, boosts their kind of reputation. So I think it's good for both the developer and the company.
When you say Starbucks, you're not referring to a Beverly Hills salon or
Starbucks.
Starbucks.
Sorry.
Two people separated by a common language. You said Starbucks, the Starbucks style guide, of course. I thought you said style box. I'm really glad I asked, because that was going to send me down a rabbit hole. We have to take a quick sponsor break. This episode is being brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Jeffrey, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y. Squarespace is constantly improving their platform with new features, new designs, and even better support. They have beautiful designs for you to start with, and all the style options you need to create a unique website for you or your business. Squarespace has over 20 highly customizable templates for you to choose from. It's incredibly easy to use, but if you want some help, Squarespace has an amazing support team that works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It starts at just $8 a month, and every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look great on every device, every time. Start a trial with no credit card required and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code Jeffrey, J-E-F-F-R-E-Y, to get 10% off and to show your support for the Big Web Show. Thank you. And we are back, zippity-doo-dah. Victoria Sponge. I'm going to forget what that means. I always take notes while I'm chatting with people on the internet, and I'm going to, I can't even begin to tell you what the different strange things that are going through my mind, Victoria Sponge. But so that's, it's named after the Queen, obviously.
I guess. I was listening to, I was at a street diner and there was an American there who was asking what spotted dick was.
I have never known what that is.
It's like a sponge cake with, like a sponge pudding with kind of fruit in it. I don't know if it's raisins or currants, or someone will correct me, but yeah.
That's much less offensive than the name would suggest.
Yeah. It's quite an old fashioned dish.
Yeah. I just thought like blood pudding or something horrible, like a young baby goose is strangled in its mother's arms and then, you know, like German food. I just thought, well,
it's actually really nice. It's a really nice pudding. And there's treacle tart as well. He was asking what that was.
He should know what treacle tart is.
Yeah.
I mean,
and jelly and jello and the difference between, yeah.
Oh, it was his first time.
I guess, yeah.
How sweet. you know that we have been watching you for Melissa Part for a long time. And we were very,
very sinister.
We were very happy that you agreed to be technical editor. I see what you do there, but can you talk about that a little bit? Like, what does it mean to be a technical editor at a magazine like that, and like Listapart, and what do you do?
So every time articles are submitted, they go up on Basecamp, and the editors have a look through them and sort of comment on what they think, whether they think it, if they think it would be good for Listapart. And when an article is accepted, we go through it and comment on what we think can be improved, or if we think there are any like errors in it. It's a lot of the messages are like Matt posting some GIFs, or Ethan having an argument with Matt, which is just like a GIF battle. And yeah, that's
so that's it. There's you, there's Andrew Kirkpatrick, who the accessibility person. There's Matt Funbreaker Marquis, who was recently on the show, and Ethan Marcotte, technical editor and progenitor of responsive design. And yeah, you guys, it's amazing that any article makes it through that gamut, because all of you have such brilliant, sharp, highly focused feelings about what web development should and shouldn't be, right? With not just from the accessibility point of view of Andrew's, although that can be very, very challenging, but really, you know, I mean, there are things that I think are okay that Ethan Marcotte thinks are very bad indeed. And, you may have seen some of that. And so, yeah, but yeah, the GIF battles are fun. I feel sorry for anyone who isn't on the Basecamp thread when, and Ethan always wins a GIF battle. There's no defeating him. Ethan Marcotte, and you can see this, if you follow him on Twitter, he's Beep on Twitter, right? B-E-E-P. You'll just see him having discussions with people by supplying an image, and they're just, it's flawless. I don't know how he does it. He's like,
He's like a GIF connoisseur.
He's like someone who was born with no other communication skills, even though he has, he has many. He's really gifted in so many areas, but his skill with this, it's like someone who's great at music because they're blind and can't walk or something. You know what I mean? And you're like, well, yes, they compensated. He seems that way in GIF battles. And yet, of course, he's a wonderfully gifted writer and designer and coder and everything else. But his skills at GIF battles are such that you would be forgiven for believing that he lived in a tomb and had no limbs. And
I just expect, like, every time I meet him, that he'll just be sort of going in a loop.
Yes, he should be. He should be going in a loop because they're animated GIFs. How did you get involved with 24 Ways?
I think Drew just emailed me and asked. I met Drew and Rachel, who run Edge of My Seat and 24 Ways, back in 2009.
At a conference or in a meetup or something?
No, I went to, oh no, it was 2006 or seven. It was Paul Bagg. He sent me on Rachel and Drew's CSS course, and this is back when I was still at school, and so I got to bunk off school for a day and go to their workshop. And I didn't have a computer then, so I had to bring in this huge laptop that I think the school lent me, that made so much noise. It was really embarrassing, and everyone had their Macs. And
it was like a steam-powered laptop?
Yeah, steam-powered. I had to keep winding it up for it to work. It didn't connect to the internet because it was that old. It was a lot of fun.
it just like connected to the sewer system or something.
Yeah. You had to kind of connect up to a tin can, and It was pretty embarrassing. A lot of people who were there kind of worked for The Guardian and had they all had these Macs, and I just had this huge work of a computer.
I'm so old that I remember having computers that weren't networked. And you could spend hours with your computer doing stuff with no other humans connecting to it and be perfectly happy and thrilled. Like, oh, I just made I'd using Quark Express to make a print layout for hours and like messing with fonts. And it was amazing.
No distractions.
And now if I plug in, if you gave me the greatest computer in the world and I couldn't connect immediately to the internet, I'd be like, oh, come on. What is this? Come on. You're kidding. And you put everything on it.
Might as well get time.
Photoshop, Illustrator, everything's on it. It's the greatest computer, endless memory. I would just be so frustrated because I couldn't. Where's Twitter?
Yeah.
How can I work? There's no Twitter. Do you, in your freelance life, do you find yourself, oh, I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. We haven't really finished this story. So Rachel Andrew and Drew McClellan, husband and wife team, they've been involved in web standards for years and years. They were both in the web standards project. They were the people who talked to Adobe to get Dreamweaver to be standards compliant back in the early 2000s, very early 2000s. Everybody owes them. Everybody owes them. And so Drew has this project. At the end of the right, leading up to Christmas, he has this it's like an advent calendar leading up to Christmas of 24, and I think it's called 24 Ways to Impress Your Friends, right?
Yeah, that was the tagline. I don't know if it's
back in the day.
Yeah.
It's just 24ways.org, but this is where, and now it's not just, it used to be code, just code. And now there's people talking about, UX and content strategy and so forth. There's lots of ways to impress your friends, not just, you know, Git for Grownups by Emma Jane Westby. And it's a wonderful publication once a year. I hate it.
Oh,
no,
jealous of it.
Yes, I hate it because they have 24 articles that would have been wonderful in a list apart, and they publish them every day. Every day there's a new one. Like, yeah, this is easy. Getting a great article up, no big deal. We did it yesterday. We'll do it today.
Oh, you don't know what goes on behind the scenes.
Oh, I'm sure they work on it all year long. I'm sure they do. But yeah, but the experience is just, I'm so blown away every year when they do this thing. And so how did you get involved with that? You're at a seminar learning CSS when you're like 11 years old. And then... A couple of months later, you're co-producing this thing. How does that work?
It was actually a few years later. Okay. I just got an email from Drew asking if I'd help out. And all I do is when an article comes in, I put it in the right format for the CMS. Nothing really more than that. But we also kind of before the 1st of December, we decide who we want to ask to write an article.
How do you pick them?
How do we think?
No, how do you pick them?
Often it'll be from reading other things they've written. So Pastry Box has been a really good place to kind of find people. Sometimes it'll be from Twitter. Sometimes people write in and ask if they can write something.
It's cool.
Kind of a mixture, really.
Do you have acquisition editors, scouts, or it's just...
No, it's just us. It's me and Drew, Owen, and Brian Suder.
Amazing.
It's good fun. It's really good fun. It's a lovely team, and we have our own kind of equivalent base camp.
With GIFs?
Not really.
With Spotted Dick. Instead,
I think next year we'll have GIFs because we might use something like Slack. But at the moment, it's just a little chat room in Google Spreadsheets.
I just found one of my pieces for it from 2008. Recession Tips for Web Designers.
Wow, I should read that.
Or not. It's a long time ago. How it goes back to. 10 Ways to Get Design Approval by Paul Boag from December 2007. This is nice. This is like a little history book of the web in a way.
Oh.
It really is. So are you you plan to do it again next year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Every year. Well, at least I hope so.
Who does the writing?
That'll be Owen Gregory.
Does the, I mean, the interstitial writing, the descriptions of, like, you know, if you could do go through the topics, it's his code. Poetry, not likely, though Dancy.
Yeah, yeah, that's Owen.
That's Owen. Okay.
Yeah, he's our editor. He's amazing. Owen Gregory.
Owen Gregory. Okay.
He's, you talked about him on, I can't remember which show it was, but you you said that Andrew Clark was raving about him.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was.
He was also editor of my book.
Wow.
Yeah, he's very, very talented. He's great to work with.
What's next for you? What are you, after winning Young Developer of the Year and freelancing on these amazing projects and being so involved in editorial, you know, in two publications that people really pay attention to, and publishing a book, what's next? What do you want to achieve?
I'd quite like to move to London at some point, because a lot of the work I do is in London. I'd like to work on more open source projects. I don't really have a plan. I just do what feels right.
I like that. And that's a perfectly good way to do it. I mean, that worked for me. If what I did worked, that worked for me. Do you see yourself eventually just, you know, working on open source, like finding a way to just make open source products and just work on open source projects? Or do you see yourself staying in client services more?
I think I do a mixture. I really enjoy working on a range of things. And after I've been working on something for, say, 6 months, I want to try something new. So, yeah, I do like client services. I know a lot of people moan about it, but I've worked with some amazing clients over the past couple of years. And it's just a shame they're all based in London.
But you've never actually worked at a place. Like, when my client services education was working at agencies, mm-hmm. and you know, getting screwed sometimes, having a good creative director, a great creative director, a bad creative director, working for someone who was honest, someone who wasn't, having a great partner, learning to get along with the business people, right? Mm-hmm. That it wasn't just about the creative, in quotes, people. And you haven't had that experience, right? So how are you able to get along well with others and get, you know, get your point of view across and all that stuff? Or does someone else do that? Are you more behind the scenes just, you know, getting stuff coded?
I actually did quite a bit of, I wouldn't say management, but stuff that isn't code. Mm-hmm. So whenever I work on a project, 90% of the time I'm working on site. So I'm directly with the client, sitting at their desk, and there's a lot of kind of back and forth with that. It's not just sitting in my bedroom and coding. That I don't think that's what front end development is anymore. Also, when I was interning at ClearLeft, I was with them for about 3 or 4 months. So I kind of got to see what it was like working at an agency. And before that, when I was still at school, and I really wanted to have experience of working in an agency, so I wrote to one that was local and asked if they'd let me sort of sit in their office and do my homework there, which they let me do. And I did that for about a year.
So you really did get the experience.
Yeah.
And you're building it every day.
Yeah. And in each project feels like a job in itself. You know, it feels like I'm starting a new job.
Learning about the business.
Yeah.
you can't not learn about the client's business and what they're worried about.
Yeah. And I really like working on site because you get to see exactly what the dynamic is. You get to see what the politics are. You get to see why decisions are made. Otherwise, it can feel a bit like they're just telling you what to do. And you don't get that backstory.
Have you ever walked out on a job?
No, luckily.
can you envision a scenario in which you would?
I'm quite picky with who I work with. I guess that might happen, but hopefully not.
your advice for someone starting out, or someone like you who's been doing it since they were a kid, but maybe wants to go pro like you?
Go for it. It's not too difficult to kind of set up as a sole trader or sole proprietor. You know, it's nice to have a safety net. If you're still working from home, you don't really have anything to lose. Go for it.
What about the internship that you did with, you were very lucky that, you know, you worked at a great, you interned at an amazing studio.
Yeah.
But internships, good idea, bad idea?
Good idea, definitely. I learned a lot about business. I learned a lot about things like proposals. It's not just, you know, it's not just coding skills I learned. It was, a lot of it was talking with clients, and I think it's got to be a good internship though. It can't be one that you're just making tea, and make sure they pay you as well, because a lot of places just want to rip you off, and I don't think it's right to not pay an intern. Because they are,
or
doing
anyone,
work. Yeah,
or
yeah.
Anyone.
If they're doing work for you, then pay them.
Right. Who were you closest with there? Who did you work most closely with there?
Natalie. So Natalie Down. Yeah, she had RSI at the time, like really, really badly. She couldn't type for more than an hour a day.
Oh my god.
So I was basically her hands, and I mean, when I say it, it sounds really boring. I was sort of typing what she was telling me to, but it was actually really interesting.
No, it doesn't sound boring to me at all.
It was pair programming. It was, you know, it was just like I got to use the keyboard the whole time. It was, yeah, I learned so much. It was, I was really lucky that I had the opportunity, and I guess it was helpful for her as well, because she could still do her job.
Well, this is great. It's been great having you on the show today.
It's been really fun.
And I will not give you any spoilers about Adventure Time, but
thank you.
Do find a way to get that the next couple seasons, because
yeah, I'll try.
Okay, nothing illegal, of course.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, take care, and thank you for everything that you do for the web. You're great.
Thank you. Thank you as well.
Thank you. Okay. Bye bye, and we'll see everybody on the next Big Web Show.